views, comments, and opinions of the following program do not necessarily reflect those of Morris Media Studios, MorrisMediaLive.com, or its affiliates. Listener discretion is advised.
Hit me!
Hey. If you don't mind, can I be far from perfect, just can I be me? Do you have time to see what a work in progress really means? Spend many a night on my knees, 'cause that's the key for me to be free. A thousand tears,
welcome. We're live. I'm so excited. We are live. Thank you for joining us. Welcome to your Girlfriend's Guide to Life podcast. I'm your host, your girlfriend, Maisha Chanel. I created this podcast to ignite the voices of Black people through social examination, candid conversations. My goal is to touch, move, and inspire you to live the life that you've been given to live. So come along with me on this journey as I show you how to live and love through adversity, and most importantly, how to keep your head up, because we all know we need to know how to keep our head up. Well, today's topic is a topic that continues to resonate in my soul and my spirit, and I'm not letting it go. Today we're talking about racism, not just racism, but institutional racism. Racism has been a disease amongst Black people for over 400 years in America. The Kyles and the Karens of the world today continue to use their white privilege to dethrone the Black man and the Black woman. But I am here to do my part to show America exactly how intellectually beautiful we are, how powerful and resilient we are. I want to show white America the opposite of who they think we are. Today marks my fourth episode of A Girlfriend's Guide to Life, and I appreciate you and thank you for tuning in with me along the way. If you've noticed, I have intentionally chosen to only speak to Black men. I'm here to support, uplift, and brag about the Black man. There is nothing better on earth than the Black king and the Black queen. With that being said, let me introduce you to my next guest. In studio, I have Dr. Mark Williams. He's an emergency room medicine doctor. He's a Los Angeles native from South Central LA by way of Watts, California. He graduated from Locke High School and received high honors and achievements as a salutatorian for his graduating class with a 3.8 GPA. Y'all hear that? A 3.8 GPA. Dr. Williams had his heart set on being a physician at a very early age. He was accepted to several or even many Ivy League schools. He chose University of California, Berkeley, for his undergrad and finished and completed medical school at USC. He also is a Navy veteran where he served three tours in Iraq as an emergency room doctor. Talk about Black excellence. This man is powerful. Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome the phenomenal Dr. Mark Williams, MD, to A Girlfriend's Guide to Life.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Doing well.
Thank you for joining me.
No problem at all.
So we're just going to have a regular conversation.
Sure.
I'm curious, after meeting you and signing your petition on social media, I thought it would be informative to let the world know who you are. So tell the world, who is Dr. Mark Williams?
Well, I'm imperfect,
incomplete,
but I'm strong. strong man of valor. I believe that I'm my brother's keeper. I'm my Heavenly Father's son. My mother named him Mark Dwight Williams Jr., of course, after my father. I'm a king and a lion, and I try to walk with integrity and character, and that's what I teach my sons. I was born by a single parent, raised by my grandmother in a small house that included her husband, my five aunts, my three cousins, and my brother.
Wow.
So at a very young age, I learned to be very competitive, having to compete against that many people, as well as to be able to utilize a little to make it into what I need or to make do. My mother, she married the guy who became my daddy. He sold drugs, particular heroin, which I came later to know was heroin. The drug morphine is made from heroin.
Mm-hmm.
He sold PCP as well as cocaine. So at a very early age, I became familiar with the smell of the liquid PCP as well as the smell of ether for freebase.
Wow.
I didn't find my biological father till I was 39 years old.
Oh, wow.
At five, I was hit by a car, drugged under the car, up a hill, down a hill, 200 feet, sustained a fractured pelvis. Went to MLK, told my mom that I would never walk again, and I definitely wouldn't run. I subsequently became a good athlete, and they had some questions of whether or not I would have kids as well, so I have four children now. So at a very young age, I was jumping hurdles. At seven, my brother and I, we were in a house fire. We subsequently escaped that as well, so I'm a survivor.
For sure, to say the least.
I went on to venture into the gangbang mentality at 10 and up till 15 to till two of my close friends were murdered on the street. Kevin Maurice Cooper, we call him Big Calhoun, Rest in Power King, and Tasu Odom. Kevin was 19, Tasu was 15. And then subsequently, one of the life-altering events happened at Gompers Junior High School. We had a gang melee there, and a 38 revolver. It either glitched, misfired, or whatever, but it hit the intended target. And so, with that fortunate incident, I didn't go to the penitentiary, and I'm here today. Went to Bethune Junior High School.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up on 115th and Avalon.
South Central LA.
Yeah. And I graduated from Locke High School, salutatorian, 1989. Went on to Berkeley, majored in molecular biology. From Berkeley, I went to Penn State. Interesting story about Penn State. It was in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I had never left the state of California, and I met one of the few black deans at a medical school, Alphonse Lure Dupree, LDP, we called him, Rest in Power King. And immediately, he irritated me.
Why?
This was after the Rodney King incident, and as soon as I walked in the office to do the interview, he asked me, why are you people in that city tearing up your city? And that was a trigger for me.
Okay.
So we went back and forth. I thought I was, you know, bellicose and belligerent during the interview. And he said, okay, well, go take a tour of the school and come back. So I come back, and he hands me an acceptance letter and a scholarship.
Wow.
And that was very impressive to me. And later he would go on to explain to me that he respected my stance. And we went back and forth about the Republican and Democratic parties. And he said, in order for blacks to really achieve, we have to have representation in both sides. So that was something that was very impressionable. Didn't stay there too long. I had two kids and a girlfriend who later became my wife. She didn't like Hershey, Pennsylvania. And she would jump on the train for 2 or 3 days at a time to go back to California because she was afraid to fly. And that, it prevented me from being the best student I could be because I was always concerned about them. They were taking sponge baths on the train. And regardless of what I would say to her, this is what was her mode of transportation of choice. So I transferred to USC, graduated in 99, went into a surgical residency where I thought I was going to become a trauma surgeon. But again, because of family dynamics, I left that, had the obligation to the Navy, went into the Navy for 10 years, three tours of Iraq, did an ER residency in the Navy, left my last tour in 2009, and found that I had some issues. I was more feisty, irritable. I challenged authority, sort of reverted back to the things I did when I grew up, got in trouble with the command, and left the Navy. After that, had some personal and professional problems. Found out later at the VA that I had some mental things going on, and I subsequently wanted to continue on working in the VA to help people like myself. And for whatever reason, wasn't allowed to work in the VA, so I started the petition, and that's the etiology of my petition. Service members have a preferential hiring at the VA.
Well, let's stop you there. Let's talk about the petition.
Okay.
So the petition is how I met you.
Right.
The petition is for you to, your goal is to gain residency or to get hired as a emergency room doctor at the VA,
correct? Correct.
Subsequently, because of your past, you've had to jump over a few hurdles.
Right.
And with institutional racism, you have been stigmatized.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the doors have been closed to you, so you created this petition that is called I Too Can't Breathe.
Right, right.
And before we got on air, you hit a benchmark of 2,500 signatures. So thank you. I'm thanking you for him, for helping him gain signatures. But he's here. I brought him here so he can talk to you a little bit about this petition that will shed some light on institutional racism and give him the opportunity to live the dreams that he desires to live after serving three tours in Iraq and going to professional school and doing everything that is required of you. It's sad to say that this brother is still having difficulties landing a job with the VA. So talk to us about talk to us about the petition and how we can support you so you can reach your goal of 5,000 signatures. And we want to do this, guys, by the end of the week. By next week, Wednesday, he wants to have 5,000 signatures. And I thought it would be a phenomenal way for him to gain exposure on his baby. So talk to us about the petition. What is the petition and how can people support you?
Well, it really came about after the George Floyd incident. I believe George Floyd, as tragic as it is, represents a macroscopic example of institutional racism. And there are many microscopic examples of institutional racism that we experience every day. And I think the best way to change the system is to adjust it on both ends. Whether you're at college and you're not allowed entrance into an exam because you're 1 minute late and you happen to be brown or yellow, or you're told by your TA that you didn't do well because you didn't go to a good school. It's those implied things that make up the microscopic examples of institutional racism. You do well on a lot of exams, and then you don't do well on one exam, and the TA tells you didn't study hard enough, or it just wasn't meant for you. Those are microscopic examples of institutional racism. So My job was to come up with a fight to address this in my own walk. I'm a service-connected veteran. I want to work at the VA. I think of no better person to work at the VA than a person like myself who went to Iraq. I get care at the VA. I'm more than adequately trained to work with veterans as an ER doctor. And I learned at the level, the government service level that doctors are employed at, there's no preferential hiring, although there is a lower level of preferential hiring. So that irritated me. And I can do either one thing. I can do the Chris Doran thing, or I can do this petition.
Don't do the Chris Doran. So we want you here.
Right. So I decided to start this petition. And again, I think this is our time. Unfortunately, George Floyd had to highlight a lot of things that we as black and brown and yellow men and women know that exist in this country. And I've been speaking to a lot of people, and I believe that while the light is shining and the roaches are running, we need to galvanize ourselves and kill some roaches at this point in time. Amen. And the only way we can do that is having our own individual fights, so that if we see any examples of mistreatment due to race, we approach them intelligently and survive through the fight so we can prepare the next generation. So that's the impetus to my petition.
So we're going to get there. We're actually, I'm committed to supporting you. If I know I have a lot of friends and family that are doing big things in high places. And so you hear his plea, you hear our plea to support him. You can find sign the petition at changeit.org. You can also find him. There's a website, and it's http://changechng.it, another black / capital ZW lowercase X, capital RC lowercase Y, capital PP. You wonder, well, how do you know that? And on Facebook, he's Mark D. Williams. And on Twitter, he's at WilliamsMDD115. Go on here, go on changeit.org and sign the petition. We need 5,000 signatures so this man can be employed. He has young children that he is responsible for co-parenting. And without your support, he can't do it. I know you sound as if you have had some struggles in your growing up, as I think both you and I have. You took your adversity and used your anger to catapult you into making it. A lot of us, I'll speak for myself, I had so much grief that the grief paralyzed me. But in conversation and talking to you, I found I listened, and there was some struggles that you had. Talk about your first struggle about Hilda. Talk about Hilda. Hilda was, initially I was like, she could have done it. But, you know, talk about her. Talk about the first struggle in high school, your senior year.
Miss Hilburn, I'm sorry.
She's still alive?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, I was a gifted student, and I took it for granted because of my history and my reputation. During my junior year, one class, I decided to take off. I had a couple assignments I needed to do in order to get the best grade in the class. And because of, you know, trying to be cuter and suave or whatever, I didn't turn in a couple assignments, and I got a B in English, Ms. Hilburn. And so that was the only time that I didn't get an A. And Hilda Jaramillo, I haven't seen Hilda since 1989. She became the valedictorian, and I was a salutatorian. It made me angry. Obviously, I had to be somewhat phased because I still remember it over 30 years ago. I still bring it up in jest with Ms. Hilburn. So, yeah, that was the first incident. Yeah.
So I like to talk about this, I think, because we do get a little big head when we know that we are it. And I think that, because initially when you told me this story, I was like, was she black? The teacher black? And you were like, yeah. I was like, now you know she could have just gave you an A so you could be. And you was like, no. It actually supported me in my endeavors, and it is why I'm here today. I think that we all go through those struggles, but for you to use it as a stepping stone is really impressive. And then there was also a second struggle that you mentioned about, and you told me about getting the D in your calculus class when you were at Berkeley. And talk about that.
So when you first go to Berkeley, you have a conference room meeting, all the incoming freshmen, and they tell you, look to your left and look to your right, and one of you three won't be here to graduate. Pre-med freshman year, I had a calculus, chemistry, rhetoric, biology, and one of my weakest subjects was math. And okay. So I didn't do too well. And I was trying to get on the basketball team, basically not focused as I was in high school, and so I had to make a major decision. I either sink or swim. And I decided to swim and pick that grade up and cut out all distractions.
Okay, so tell me about the time when, or has it been ever a time in your studies professionally or even while undergrad that you told yourself that you couldn't do it and that you were actually going to have to resort to your plan B?
No. I mustered up the energy because my plan B involved selling drugs. And as for me, I didn't want to go back to my community as a failure. People were, I don't know if they were serious or jokingly saying I would be back within my first year, but I took it to heart and I told myself I would never go back unless I had this degree. So failure wasn't an option. I didn't have nobody to go back home to. I didn't have no help. My biological father wasn't in my life. So it was hook or crook. I had to do what I needed to do.
So you're saying that there was no plan B?
Plan B involved doing, what a lot of my friends, my brother, moving some product.
And we don't want that. I commend you. I commend you for staying focused, especially as a black man. As a black man in America, you guys are like, have been treated so unfairly, to say, for lack of a better word. And to see that you are still standing strong, yes, there are some things that you are working through, but to see you here in your right mind wanting to make it is commendable. And I want to continue to support you. So I want you to let us know how we can find you, how we can support you. I mentioned it, but I think it's best for you to share that. What do you need from us? What do you need from the black community? What is it that we can do to help you so you can be your best?
It's just about standing together, understanding that this is a very critical time in our history where people are wanting to make an allegiance with us. They understand our cause. For the first time in my lifetime, there's actual empathy about what's happening to us. But it's not just black men, it's black women, it's Hispanic men and women. It's minorities in general, and I don't know, I have some understanding, maybe it's the Trump phenomena. Maybe it's the loss of power of the former majority folks. But like I said, the analogy of roaches is real. They maybe see an end to their leverage as being on top. And so they're trying to crush us like you would kill a snake, cutting off the head. And they know that the men, we are the providers and we're the fighters. And if they can annihilate us, maybe they can delay or stop the inevitable. But in the same way that God was on the side of the Israelites, He's on the God, on our side as well. And it's no coincidence that it took the Israelites over 400 years to get out of Egypt successfully. And we dealt with slavery for over 400 years, and so history speaks for itself.
Yes, it does.
So it's just about standing together. You know, I don't care what the cause is. We all should support one another because we all are in it together. And so best to find my petition is going on my Facebook page. Mark D. Williams is open. And my Twitter page. And all you got to do is click. It takes a couple of clicks. I've already been in contact with several congresspeople. Adam Schiff's representative have already contacted me. They're actually supposed to call me this week based on the signatures I've already acquired. And now they're going to be very surprised that I have more signatures. So we are stronger in numbers. So we just
Absolutely.
Need the numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. We need the numbers. We need 5,000 signatures by next Wednesday. Can we do that? Can you support us? Can you help us?
And if you're not down with that, you can start your own little thing. Whatever injustice or slight or slant you see, start your own. Go to change.org and start your own petition. Mm-hmm. And we just support each other.
Right. So you have this phenomenal book here, The New Negro.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about why you chose to bring this book here today? I'm curious. I haven't read it yet. It's clearly something that you hold near and dear your heart to speak on it.
Well, first and foremost, my oldest daughter, Raya, gave it to me, and she was considerate. You know, we've had a crazy relationship. She's the oldest, and, you know, we go at it from time to time because we're most alike. But for Father's Day, my daughter gave me the book, and it happens to be written by the namesake of my high school, Elaine Leroy Locke. Mm-hmm. And it represents who we are. Mm-hmm. For those who don't know, the history of Locke High School was built after the Watts riots. And so it represents the novelty of at least the government trying to help us by giving us another educational institution. And so with education, in the same way that Jacob had to change his name, you can change your name and become an Israel. So the new Negro is just another metaphor of us just growing and adapting and being the chameleons and kings that we are.
Awesome. See, I knew it was there had to be a reason behind it. That's actually pretty cool. So before we get out of here, I got to give a few little shout outs and sponsors. As you guys know, I am an emancipated youth. I was in the foster care system until I was 18. And I'm here to represent that community. I'm here to show my brothers and my sisters that I know that a lot of times we feel like there's a hand on our neck and you can't breathe. But I just want you to see that you can breathe. You can make it. So with that being said, shout out to all my little brothers and sisters, big brothers and sisters that are trying to make it through the system without the support of parents. I'm here for you. Also, I would be nothing without the support that I am getting from my visitation monitor services. My baby continues to thrive and grow, and I'm proud. I'm proud of the services that we are giving to the community. So thank you, My Visitation Monitoring Services. Also, Girlfriend's Guide to Life has a Facebook page, and we need your support. Please go to Girlfriend's Guide to Life on Facebook and click the like button. We need your support as well. Also on Instagram is Girlfriend's Guide to Life, spelled LYFE. That is all we have, you guys. Thank you for joining in. And before we go, I'd like to give a shout out to my girl, Felicia, the poetess from at Morris Media Studios. Without you, we couldn't do this. Thank you for your support and your encouragement to continue to do this. Until next time, I'll see you guys July 22nd. And I don't know what I'm talking about yet, but I'll be live. Love you guys. Take care. Bye.
Hit me!
Hey. If you don't mind.